Welcome to the Time for a Reset podcast, the podcast where I, Paul Frampton, interview senior marketeers on the big issues of the day and the thing that they want to see reset with an ever-changing landscape.
Welcome back to another episode of Time for a Reset. This morning we actually have an episode with a difference. So around about a year ago, we were lucky enough to have ISBAR and PwC join us to talk about the findings of a groundbreaking report into the programmatic space. It was actually one of the episodes from Time for a Reset that got the most traction and most listenership. So we thought, why not a year on actually stop and dwell on what's changed and what actually has happened since then. And rather than just have the folks from ISBAR and PwC on, we've actually got a slightly different lineup today. So firstly, I'm delighted to be joined by Stephen Chester, who was part of that initial conversation from ISBAR. And then also by Ollie Whitten, who is the COO of Adform. Ollie was on episode 21 talking about how things are changing and how many brands are reconsidering the walled gardens and their tracking and transparency. So that is another good episode to listen to. And if you didn't listen to the initial episode, which was episode 5, I'd suggest you maybe go back and have a little listen to that before you tune into this episode. And last but not least, we're very delighted to be joined by Alison Thorburn, who is from BT and who runs the digital accelerator there. So very much thinking about how to move BT forward in terms of use of new platforms, technology, data. So we have a great lineup of people from all the different perspectives of our industry, a brand, industry, and also one of the big tech players within the programmatic space. So welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to be back.
Indeed. So I'm just going to very, very quickly just mention a few of the two or three key findings that the report a year ago came out with, because I think they're just useful to just ground us before we start the conversation. So one of the first, which was flabbergasting for me, and I think quite exhausting for Stephen and Sam from PwC, was the fact that the access to the data that was required to run this study was very complex. So of course, all the brands that signed up were keen to give access all the way through their supply chain. But of course, what you have is you have a DSP and then an SSP and various different partners in the supply chain, and contracts are signed between each of those. So actually getting to the data took 9 months, incredibly. So that in itself suggests that we have a landscape that needs to improve and update. The second was around the standardization of the supply chain, what things are called and how you can actually start to match. And scarily, only 12% match rate was actually achieved across all of the data that was analyzed, which I think all of us would probably feel is not best in class. So there's work to be done there. There was also a statistic that was put out around this 15% unknown delta in terms of costs that couldn't be identified. And that is something that I think is still kind of debated as to where that money is going. So I think overall, it was clear that the study helped people within the industry think about what are the key aspects that need to improve from a standardization perspective. How do we, I guess, almost grow up as industry to make sure that this is a part of advertiser spend that can be properly audited, and the quality, the transparency, the access to information and kind of how effective that inventory is a lot better than maybe it was back then. So I'm going to start by asking our panelists today whether they actually think things have improved and what they've done as a result. And I'd love to start with you, Alison, first, if I can, given your brand side, and ultimately it's your money that gets put into the programmatic space. So could you give us a sense of whether you think that report drove reset and what BT has done as a result of it since then, please?
Yes, thank you. The report was really useful for drawing attention to what a brand could focus on and address in its own chain. But then equally, it made it very clear that it's no brand individually can actually fix this. This is an industry-wide problem that needs to be addressed. And realizing that the data took so long to extract because there was no common language, and those are massive issues that only an industry collective can do. But for us, we had a huge sense of relief because it confirmed the approach we'd been taking in rationalizing down to only three DSPs, the investigations that we'd done over the 3 years previously in controlling our supply path and optimizing to what we could and building relationships. So we progressed that further forward. We picked up on four major initiatives and have worked on all of them going forward since then. And they have all given results, be it either positive or negative, but they're all learning. And the ultimate thing is no brand can afford to be complacent, and they have to take responsibility and accountability for who they work with.
Great. So kind of an ongoing journey moving forward, but still work to do. Sounds like. Great. And Stephen, I mean, obviously you were one of the architects of the report. And I know that we were talking in a pre-chat before this, and there's a new report that the ANA is talking about launching fairly shortly and doing an RFP for. So what do you think's changed in the last year? And are you happy, confident that the market has woken up a little bit more to some of these issues?
So yes, I do. I think the report helped with that. I mean, our report, which we published last year, was 2 years in the making, but it built on two previous studies that were done by the WFA about 6-7 years ago now, that sort of sought to articulate essentially the sort of fees in the supply chain as part of a broader report talking about, you know, how programmatic works. And then the ANA, our cousins in America, then did a follow-up first forensic report just looking at buy-side data in 2017 with our Canadian cousins, the ACA. And then various publishers, which I think are well-known, including The Guardian, had actually looked at their own supply chains. So our own study sought to just build on that and sort of build further momentum and try to do an end-to-end study of taking publisher and advertiser data and trying to join it in the middle. So I think that there has been progress in the last year or so. I think certainly the brands that took part in the study have each looked at the findings themselves, because they received individual reports as well as the aggregated benchmark essentially that's created by the 15 brands and 12 publishers taking part in it. So each of them have taken individual action from each of their own private reports. In terms of what we've done as an industry, there were two key findings, which I think briefly touched upon in the intro, which was essentially there needs to be better standardized access to data, because it took 9 months to access the data because of the permissions chains, the permissions required between parties in the supply chain to allow that data to be shared. So that needs to be, you know, reduced much more so, just to a matter of, you know, if not real time, just a matter of weeks. And then the legal terms that dictate that need to be standardized. So you don't need to go through manual permissions. It means that an advertiser and publisher who then hires an auditor, the auditor would then have the rights to access that data on their behalf. Yeah. So that's point one. Point two is then when you get there, the quality of the data needs to be standardized to allow for better matching, because we could match 12% of supply chains of impressions, supply chain impressions in the study. That needs, the goal has to be 100%. And there are various reasons which we'll tease out, I'm sure, in the discussion of why it was so low, but the quality and fidelity of the data needs to be better. So, and then once you do that, you can then investigate where the sort of missing one third of cost that we identified in the supply chain, so roughly 50%, gets to the end publisher. And of that 50% of cost of the supply chain, about 50% or one third of costs are not identifiable to any one party. But you need to improve access to data and the fidelity of it before you can then investigate the drivers of that. So we'll talk about it later on, I think, through the podcast. But, you know, we've set up an industry task force to actually address those two key findings. And there's a press release that's actually just gone live today, which seeks to articulate essentially the progress so far of the task force.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for kind of peppering some of those figures in again with some more context. And Ollie, you guys obviously at Adform run a very kind of well-established global DSP, and you obviously also have an SSP. So how did you guys look at that study and what have you done over the last year, either kind of as a result of ISBOR or just as a result of wanting to improve your tech stack to adapt to some of these issues that Stephen has outlined?
Yeah, thanks. I think the report obviously overall has raised awareness to a very significant degree. And I suppose we've seen kind of, you know, you've heard about the industry-led initiatives, and then we have much more buyer-led initiatives that are sort of coming to the fore around, you know, increase in private deal trading, and you know, advertisers really looking to own their supply path. We see that as a mechanic that's happening through our platform all the time. But the area that we focused on as a result of the ISBA study was actually, we called up the team at PwC who ran the study and asked them to come and look at our platform and run a similar audit through the platform to understand all of the costs, all of the reporting, all of the, you know, transparency through the platform end to end. And we ran a big study with them, which, you know, proved to have some fantastic results, of course, in terms of understanding all of the costs and all of the reporting throughout the value chain with no discrepancies. And the reason we did that was really to shine a light on the fact that reports like the ISBA one do raise awareness, but they also can raise a fear that, you know, there's sort of nefarious activity going on out there. And I think we were very keen as a business to show, you know, put our best foot forward and sort of take a leadership position in terms of that transparency. And I think the report proved that.
To support you, Ollie, on that statement, internally we did a communication session about the results of the study, because there was some willful misinterpretation in the press to create headlines, whereas the actual programmatic display, it performs, it commercially makes sense, it absolutely works from a brand perspective. Some of that information out there, we just needed to straighten it up and say, you know, this isn't a murky thing, that it does have issues and it does need addressing, but it does work.
Thank you, Alison. Now, that's a really, really valuable point, because I do think there are quite a few brands, marketers, that do have that perception that because they see studies like this and the 50%, the 15%, or they hear about ad fraud or whatever else, that the complexity of the medium becomes so inaccessible to many that they do just write it off. So it is interesting to hear that. And I love the fact that you guys put supply path optimization at the core of what you do, because I don't think there are enough brands that do that. Could you maybe just reflect on why you do that and what it's helped you achieve? Because I think that might be helpful for some other listeners.
Commercially, it makes more sense for a brand to be able to, for every pound it spends, for as much of it to get to the publisher as possible in a quality controlled way. So you know where the money has gone along that supply path to get to the publisher, and that you're buying into the right publisher at the right price, and you will see an improvement in your you know, your CPMs, your cost per thousand when you're buying, and your ultimately your conversion. So it adds upon the maths to do it. And then obviously you do want to spend to put brand protection in there. So that is a cost that's going to come out of every pound you spend to go towards the publisher. You have to put costs in there for things. But for each part of the path, you can scrutinize it and look at, where is that money going? Is that money well spent? And as long as you're comfortable that money is well spent, then you know why you're only getting X through to the publisher. There are some hops, you know, there can be multiple jumps in supply paths and things like that yeah, do need more scrutiny, but you're really in the details there. And that's where having a very strong agency becomes important to the brand.
Right. Yeah. I remember we touched briefly on that when Sam and Steve were talking initially a year ago about, you really need to employ smart people, smart agencies, smart kind of practitioners that can help you get to the bottom of this, because yes, it can be done badly and there can be some poor quality out there, but that's why, with like most things in life, you employ experts to actually do their work to make sure that you get the best out of it. Ollie, I'm interested from an ad form perspective, from your portfolio of clients across the world, how many really obsess about what Alison was talking about, they're really digging in and scrutinizing the supply chain? Does it need to happen more, or do you think that's a trend that's increasing?
No, I think overall it's a trend that's certainly increasing. We see it manifest in a few different ways. One is trying to defragment or decomplex their tech setup as a whole. As Alison mentioned, the example of going down to a smaller number of DSPs and really understanding the supply chain. We see it kind of going a level, you know, beyond that as well, where people try to consolidate the supply chain overall. So, for example, building their own curated marketplaces, either the agency doing that or in some cases the brand as well. So they really build, you know, a very strong relationships with the media owners that they want to be trading with and transacting with, as opposed to opening up to, you know, the wider web. And I think that is a bit evidenced by, you know, this year or last year rather, the private deal and private marketplace trading overtook the open marketplace trading in the UK. And I think that's a shift towards much more direct transactions between, you know, buyers and sellers. And we see that, you know, all across our client base.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a really interesting insight as well when I saw that report, because that's very different to the US from what I understand.
Yes, I think so. I mean, the US is a very scale-driven market. I think it depends on the media you're talking about. If you go into CTV, for example, it is much more direct deals, whereas in the sort of display video space, it's much more open. But it is a, you know, it's a very high-scale market with many, many media touch points, where, you know, in European markets, typically it's a smaller number of media owners that buyers are transacting with.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. And I want to come back to the point about CTV and other channels that are rapidly becoming programmatized, if that's even a word. But before we do, I just wanted to touch on another kind of initiative that has been happening in the industry, the Trust Tagnet initiative, which is kind of blockchain related DLT, distributed ledger technology. I think I've got that right. As that is another study which various big brands have got involved with to try and scrutinize and match and understand whether the quality of the inventory they're buying is what they thought it was and that it's actually driving value. So I'd love to come to each of you for a quick perspective on that before we move off this topic. So Steve, maybe I could come to you first, because I know you guys have been involved with it in some shape or form.
Yeah, so this is something which Chickwebs as an organization, which has since merged with Tag, was looking at about 2.5 years ago, and has run a pilot looking essentially overseeing whether or not it, you know, this has legs, and whether or not, you know, having a distributed ledger technology, an industry owned blockchain will work. And certainly some of the results are really interesting from some of the pilot results that came out last year and further sort of piloting that's happening at the moment. I think it's really interesting. I think I think you know what we're trying to do in the sort of work of the task force, which followed on from the study we're doing, is to look at essentially how we can create streamlined and create financial auditing end to end in a way that's easy, cost effective, and doesn't take, you know, over £1 million worth of study and, you know, and 18 months of work to try to achieve that any client, any advertiser or publisher could actually achieve. But that still is a form of manual auditing. It still require, you know, an auditor to go into and to look backwards at historical data. I think what we've got to look at going forward, and DLT is one option for that as well, is having always on access to data, perhaps not just for auditing purposes, but also for optimization purposes, and for advertisers and publishers to have access to that data. And at the moment, the tests of DLT will prove out whether or not that is possible and scalable. But I think we have to head to a world where, for an automated programmatic world, surely there has to be an automated always on access to data, obviously in a privacy centric way. But that has to surely be the goal in the future, rather than just analog approaches in isolation.
Yeah, no, great point, Steve. And Alison, I don't believe you were involved in that pilot. What's your view of DLT or blockchain as a solution?
To be commercially blunt, I think as a brand, from a brand perspective, why should we divert spend from a media campaign to fund an additional tech layer that sits over the problem, when the problem is actually the tech vendors underneath need to actually address supply path transparency? And that's just by fixing some data fields so that we speak a common language across various things. And that is privacy centric. It's so just to be really quite blunt about it, from a commercial point of view, why can't the technology fix it? Fix it there. Those people are clever enough, you know.
Blunt is good. Well, we have a technology vendor on the line, so Ollie, I'm going to let you respond to that.
I hope I'm clever enough. So we have been involved in the pilot program, and I think we do see it as a good solution in the long run, and we're continuing to engage in that. But it does require a lot of stakeholders to kind of agree some common standards, and that will take time. And I suppose what we see is there are lots of opportunities to optimize supply chain in the near term, to better understand costs, to defragment tech setups, to sort of streamline, to pick good partners, to set up different ways of trading that can address the problem really in the near term, while still investing towards something like distributed ledger in the longer run. But I think, you know, that need for everyone to collaborate around standards is certainly clear, and DLT seems to be a good solution to that. But I think, you know, it, a little as Alison's describing, there are, you know, lots of things that brands can do already now to get better transparency.
Right, yeah. And I suppose, listening to all of you, the good thing is that there are more efforts and cross-industry efforts going into improving the standardization and the ability to actually audit what is obviously a increasingly fast-growing space. And it's that point that I guess I wanted to segue, pivot slightly off into around. We often talk about programmatic and people read that as digital display publishers, but of course, rapidly buying audiences through technology is kind of touching TV, connected TV, which is fast growing, particularly in the US. Europe's been a bit slower. Audio has digitized very fast. And of course, digital out of home inventory, although not quite in the same way programmatic, because there are some nuances there in terms of how it's delivered. All of these channels are, in the next few years, going to be buyable through technology with better data, tighter targeting, etc. So I'd love to hear kind of whether you think there are new challenges that come in terms of some of the things that we've touched on in terms of quality and auditing, and whether you feel that programmatic actually is possibly the right term for what is now just becoming a different way, rather than picking up the phone like we used to do to book a page in the Daily Mail or to book a spot on ITV. Technology and buying audiences inventory through technology is rapidly becoming something that will touch all media, not just digital. So I don't know who wants to take that one first, but rather than pick someone, if someone wants to jump in, that'd be great.
I think it's really exciting. It's got loads of challenges, don't get me wrong. The measurement, how you pull it all together. There is no centralized way of seeing if something is incremental in a channel or if you're just double buying. But as these channels are coming on board, and it is a programmatic way of buying, and we're all using our data to enrich it, it's got loads of challenges. And I think the Origin project is a fantastic way to bring it together. And it's not going to be easy. But meanwhile, as brands, we are investing and testing and trying these channels, because audience diversification is huge. And no child of mine watches anything that I watch on live stream, unless it's sport. They listen to Spotify. They don't listen to normal radio broadcast. It's so diverse. And we want, as a brand, to reach all of these people at the right time with the right proposition, but we only want to reach them X number of times. Right. So it's hugely challenging, very exciting. Should it be called programmatic? I know programmatic's got some negative connotations historically, but words evolve to mean different things. So it might just organically grow into a new name, or it might keep its name and become to mean this broader thing. I think we'll just have to see how that changes.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. And Ollie, I know when we chatted recently in the other podcast, you talked quite a lot about actually the opportunities for better measurement as a result of having some of these channels bought through more centralized technology. So maybe you could just share your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. And I think it's hugely exciting what's happening at the moment as more and more media become addressable effectively. And we see it with, you know, rapid increases in digital out of home trading, in audio trading, in CTV, video, all sorts of different environments. And I think that presents such exciting opportunities to start to piece together, you know, much broader media mix in a single, you know, platform approach. We, of course, you know, we'll get into identity, I'm sure. But of course, you know, that those are, you know, somewhat siloed or have been somewhat siloed kind of touch points. And, you know, the ability to connect them together is really critical in order to have better measurement, in order to, you know, have strong addressability and so forth. But I think undoubtedly all of those segments are rapidly becoming addressable, and we're seeing, you know, advertisers invest towards that ability to piece them together. To answer the question around programmatic being the right discipline, I think when at the point at which it's sort of 90% of the digital market outside of search and social, I don't think it's necessarily the right term anymore, because it's by and large all of digital media. Yeah. And I think that's only going to increase as all of these other channels come online. So yeah, I think it's becoming the de facto way to trade, because it has a lot of benefits in terms of, yeah, the audience, the frequency capping, the measurement, all of those things are, you know, undoubtable benefits of programmatic.
Great, thanks, Ollie. And Steve, would you rebrand programmatic?
Yeah, I mean, I whether or not, you know, programmatic is the right term, I mean, you know, I mean, it's very simply, it's automation, isn't it? You know, search has had automation for a long time, you know, not the same functionality and automation of programmatic, but it is automation. And I think, you know, just try and simplify things. If it's just automation of buying, surely that's, you know, there's just a sort of simpler definition. But I do think that it's going to come down to how easy it is to do that. I mean, you talked about, you know, digital out of home being a different flavor of programmatic. If we get to a stage where there's automation, but there is still a huge amount of heavy lifting and it's very different, and there's not centralized buying platforms. And I think the one limitation is that there are other channels who are looking to programmatic and thinking, we don't necessarily want to reap all the benefits and learnings from programmatic and digital, but we don't necessarily want to have some of the challenges and actually sort of, you know, essentially put in place measures which weren't necessarily, if I'm a media owner, be beneficial to me as a media owner. So I think there's some skepticism, but also, you know, some conservatism, I think, would be from some media owners about adopting programmatic into their channels, although they need to embrace it. So I wonder what the flavor of, you know, is going to look like programmatic in each of the channels, and whether or not we're just replacing essentially manual with an automated layer, but it's going to require a lot of heavy lifting still to operate all of those different automation layers, and we're making a bit of a rod for our own back. So I think the what we're trying to do, you know, through, you know, I mean, what Adform are trying to do is fantastic. What brands are trying to do individually in programmatic in their digital supply chains is very laudable and is great. And what we're trying to do as a trade association, working with other trade associations, with our reports and the task force, is trying to fix some of the things so that people see and can reap all the benefits of programmatic, but we fix some of the underlying issues. And I think that will give more confidence to other channels in terms of actually then turning and becoming programmatic or automated, or whatever term we do tend to use or will use in the future.
Interesting. No. Really great points. And of course, I think some of the concern that some of the more traditional media owners have got is, what once it moves to tech, then are they just handing more over to the big tech giants, the walled gardens of this world? But equally, I think you raise a really interesting point around the flavour of television. I mean, television is talking programmatic in some of the things it's saying it's doing, but arguably it's not quite programmatic, some of the things they're doing. They're obviously starting to use a bit more of their first party data to allow some targeting, but it's not necessarily the way ITV talks programmatic versus AdSmart. They're quite different things. And then of course digital out of home is a different thing again, and in a third-party cookie world, which we obviously have today, it's fairly easy to measure things that are delivered through web. But then you've got the mobile conundrum. CTV's IP-driven, digital out-of-home, completely different proposition. So even when we have third-party cookies, joining all those things up together is challenging. But of course, we can't not have the conversation around what's going to happen in a year's time, under a year's time, more than a year's time, who knows? But let's move on to that point around cookieless and identity. I know, Alison, you guys have done quite a lot of work to think about this space. Like, how does BT think about what's going on, and how prepared do you feel for this future that is coming fast towards us with Google's decisions?
Probably it depends on what day of the week it is. Actually, I think we're as prepared as we can be. As a brand, we've kept very close to it all and been very open to conversations and attended as much as we can to pull in together what is going on. It is very clear to us from a brand point of view that, you know, that there are four major things, which is the publisher IDs, the universal IDs, the walled gardens and sandbox. Sandbox, none of us, we're all waiting for Google. So we literally all have to wait. And then walled gardens will become stronger, but in in their capability, because they are owned and operated, so they know what they're doing. It's their data on there as well. Universal IDs is an area where there's so much swirl going on. And, alliances and who's doing what. And I think they're all taking the right approach in that they're having all these conversations. They're aligning themselves so that, the supply path can work with nearly anybody and everybody coming through for things. But we're looking, that is the area that we are looking at with the most sort of wariness about. Is it still privacy centric, or are we actually inadvertently recreating the third party cookie? So we're watching and we're participating in conversations. We have made some decisions about who we're going to partner with for some of the evolving technology solutions there. And it's very clear there's no one solution, absolutely no one magic bullet out there that is going to fix it all for everybody. We're going to need to partner with multiple for things and look at how we control that, and are we getting incremental, make sure we don't double up. So it's complicated, but we're as close to it as we can be.
Sounds like a pretty good score report so far. And Ollie, as Alison mentioned, there's no one solution. That reminds me of the phrase that we used in our earlier podcast around there's no one ring to rule them all. Adform's obviously done a lot of work around kind of first party. You have very good publisher relationships and you've been thinking about alternative approaches. So perhaps you could just frame for us like your approach versus like a Google Flock approach and what else is happening, just to contextualize it. Because I have to confess, I think I get more confused the more I read rather than clearer.
I think you're probably in the majority there. Just to frame, I suppose, our approach to it, you basically have these different categories. I think Alison laid them out very clearly, which is the sort of login-based or authenticated web approach of sort of unified IDs based on logins. You have obviously the first-party ID world and the first-party data world, which is brand data or publisher data. Those with the end kind of consumer relationship, and they might have first-party cookies, for example. And then you have the sort of sandbox environment. I suppose our view is that platforms that are able to work across those different solutions, bring them together and perpetuate, all of the or as much of the current trading mechanics and addressability as possible, are the ones that will win out in the end. Because as Alison says, no one of those solutions is going to meet all of the needs of a marketer or a publisher. And so, our approach here is to bring those things together. And we've made a lot of progress around the first two categories. But, as Alison pointed out, we're all sort of waiting on the third category around the sandbox and Flock and when, when that really moves forward, particularly in Europe.
Thank you, Ollie. And you touched on a point around, I guess, the fact that ultimately it's about getting that publisher view of the consumer to align better with the brand view of the consumer, with the first party data on one side and the first party data that the publisher has on the other side. Of course, that, to the point you raised, Alison, potentially might bring us close to some new privacy issues. And I know that's an area that you're very close to, Steve. So how do you think about all of the ID cookieless conversations right now?
Yeah, I think they're interesting, because I think there's, particularly with some of the unified ID solutions that are actually on the market at the moment, they seem to sort of fall into a couple of camps, which is the deterministic based on email address. So having, you know, known information about the user and tying, and you know, and you know, publisher or advertiser working with the tech companies to do that, or those that the sort of decentralized solutions that you know, again, claim to use privacy-centric solutions, so that the data, you know, that data doesn't leave the publisher or advertiser, so the user's not giving over their data, but fragments of that data are then used and taken to still enable targeting, retargeting, and essentially measurements. So I think it'd be interesting to see where the axe falls and whether or not the ICO and other data protection authorities, when they start digging into ID solutions, which I don't think they're doing at the moment, determine whether or not, you know, these solutions meet the obligations required under PECA and GDPR. I mean, the ICO was very clear 2 to 3 years ago in this updated PECA guidance that new technologies which replace, or essentially cookie replacements, essentially had to abide by the same rules, and that has to be informed consent. So I think central to this is whether or not publishers and advertisers can adequately explain to their customers how these technologies are used to get their informed consent, so the users know how their data is being used. And that's the central theme that the ICO and other DPAs around Europe are looking at, is whether or not users, you know, and customers are informed about how their data is being used. Is it in plain enough language, plain enough English, so people actually understand that? But until I think they, some of those authorities start digging into these ID solutions, there is a feeding frenzy at the moment, and it is a challenge for companies to understand which ones they should or shouldn't work with. But I think the direction of travel is moving away from not identifying users. So something, if you have replacement technologies which still seek to identify the user, in some ways that seems counterintuitive to the direction of travel.
Right. Yeah. And just listening to you trying to dumb it down into plain enough English feels like quite a challenge for even the industry, let alone for legislators and for kind of legal folks within brands. So yeah, there's clearly quite a lot of work still to be done there.
And totally agree with you. It is incredibly hard, and like you said, every day it's like which bit applies, and when you're looking at things. And I have to say, one of the positive things that's come out of the last year with all of these announcements and what's industry going to do has been the way through trade bodies like ISBAR and the others, we've actually got together as brands and started talking a lot more. So it's actually created such a conversation within industry and brands and how we address things and what initiatives and concerns we've got. So it's great to get that open dialogue going.
Yeah, no, that is a great point. I know that the ISBAR programmatic group is a very, one of the, probably one of the most valuable and most, there's a lot to be discussed. And I think you're right, it does require different perspectives to come together in different parts of the industry and to talk these things through, because as we touched on right at the beginning, it's the cross-industry initiatives where you actually get advertisers, service providers and tech together working to build a better world that will actually get us there, because we have quite a fragmented landscape. There's a danger with all these new channels, it's even more fragmented. So unless there is more collaboration, which I know ISBAR is pushing for, then we probably won't accelerate that each year that goes on past the report that we've moved forward. Alison, just thinking about what you shared just then, like do you feel like the service part of the industry, so agencies, consultancies, are keeping up with what's changing to be able to advise you and brands around all of this change? Because it's clearly a lot of complexity, as you just said.
Agency-wide, I'm delighted to work with our agency for things. They do keep us informed. We're we're equals in our conversations about things. And obviously we work with Essence, who are a Group M agency. So there is a lot of insight that they can bring about what's going on worldwide with initiatives and things. So that's where the power of an agency comes in as well. But you've got to be talking to the right part of an agency, which, you know, is your programmatic leads, your head of programmatic, and your data strategy side of the business.
Very true. Very true. And any reflections on that from you, Ollie, Steve?
I just, not so much on that, but I just wanted to return to the point around trading in a sort of first party world and what we're seeing with regards to essentially the principles in the transaction, right? We started out talking today about, you know, this quite fragmented and complex value chain. And I think the shift towards a first party world ultimately is putting more control back to the publisher and their relationship with the consumer to have the dialogue that Steve is describing, right? Which is, you know, to really make sure that they understand what is happening with their data and for them as consumers, and similarly with the brand and their clients. And I think what we're seeing already in cookieless environments like Safari and Firefox is that actually those transactions can happen in a consented, privacy first, you know, first party world in a way that is better than, you know, that third party world that we're coming from. And I think that's a positive, both in terms of putting more control back in the hands of the principals and in terms of the consumer relationship. So I actually think, you know, there, it is a bumpy road, and I understand it's a complicated one that the whole industry is working its way through. But I think there can be a very bright future out the other side of this, if done correctly.
Now, I like that, Ollie. And I think invariably, whenever there is kind of tectonic change, it does drive innovation. And we may well be in a better place at the end of this, because there have been, let's admit, some bad practices with how certain tech providers and publishers have kind of used data and cookies. So let's hope we get to a better place. But as you kind of rightly said, Steve, make sure that we don't end up creating a scenario where actually consumers attract even more deeply than they are with cookies, just because the complexity of the tech is not well understood. So we're coming to a close now. It's been a fabulous conversation. We've touched on so many areas, all the way through from, I guess, improving the auditing and understanding of the kind of data path through supply chain, new channels coming online, identity, first party. There's a lot there. And I'm sure there are many marketers that sit there and go, wow, I don't feel like I'm deep enough in this to really understand it. So I'd love it if each of you could just maybe give like one or two, if you've got two, kind of suggestions about what area you would really suggest people zone in and think about now. So what can they be doing for the rest of this year to prepare for what feels like a bright future, but a more complex, more fragmented, more complicated future? So whoever wants to go first, jump in.
Key thing when I was thinking about this question was, you know, it's to get out there and really understand the identity solutions that are out there in the market, to talk to partners and understand what their plans are around this area. And I think not to be afraid to ask the dumb questions, because I think, you know, more times than not, there are half the people in the room who are wondering exactly the same thing. And to get out there and test things now, because I think we do have a ticking clock. And I think there is an opportunity to test things already now that will set us marketers up for a much better place in 2022.
Thanks, Ollie. Steve?
Yeah, I think a lot of the brands that certainly from a programmatic perspective that took part in our study have taken their own learnings and actually instituted change to their supply paths and optimized their own supply paths. I think there are other brands that can certainly take inspiration from that and can take some of the learnings and findings from not only our report but past reports and findings to essentially then optimize, you know, their own supply paths. And, you know, Ollie's already touched upon there are many areas which brands can optimize now, and we've seen that with some brands actually then contracting directly with the SSPs as well and actually trying to control much of the supply chain. So there are many measures and the recommendations both from the reports and also individual ad tech companies and indeed consultancies which can help brands and publishers on that journey. And I'd encourage, you know, brands and publishers to both lean into that I'd agree with Ollie about the ID solutions as well, about leaning into that, because clearly when Google does make the change, you know, Chrome accounts for 60% of the browser market in the UK. So although Safari, with Apple Safari, with Mozilla Firefox, made these changes a couple of years ago, and that's about a third of all users in the UK, you know, that there's going to be a huge chunk of the market, which is suddenly going to flip, you know, to new identity solutions. So certainly, you know, we're helping brands to understand, as Alison touched upon, through running a series of sort of cookieless sessions at ISBAR, and having our members essentially put in front of solution providers who will then present these solutions, and then we can debate and discuss them and just try and get as informed as possible and try and pick those providers which most align essentially to the ways that those brands want to work. And I would certainly encourage other brands to do the same, and publishers also clearly to do the same, which I know they're doing through the Association of Online Publishers.
Thank you, Steve. And Alison, we started with you, so it feels appropriate to end with you.
Well, I positively endorse what Ollie and Steve have just said, and also as a brand, just listen and talk to the industry and then decide what is best for your business objectives, because brands, you know, we have things that we have to deliver on as well. And get as a brand, make sure your own house is in order, which be it your website, your app, look at your data flows, and make sure that you're as ready as you can be.
Great advice from all of you. And as you rightly pointed out, there are lots of resources out there. Time carries on, but we should make sure, which is why we've had this podcast, go back and review the great work that was done a year ago. Safari and Firefox testing can be done now to start to work out what it might look like in a Chrome world without cookies. And of course, as rightly said by you, Ollie, there are lots of good materials and resources and thinking that's been written on the first party space. So yeah, encourage all of the listeners to actually give up time to be curious about this stuff and to dig into it, because then you've got a much better likelihood of being able to work out what those potential solutions will be. I think it's fairly obvious that there is no one solution that works across the piece here. It's complex, but it's been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. It's been super insightful in it. It feels like what we wanted to achieve, we definitely did. So thank you, Ollie, Steve, and thank you, Alison.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Time for a Reset. I hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did. We'll be back talking to a senior marketeer very soon. Make sure you don't miss out on any new episodes by subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or SoundCloud, and leave us a review at timeforareset.co.uk.